Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Casterbus. My name is Christian Corley. Things are a little bit muted this week. It's nearly Christmas. And as you've probably noticed, we're a bit late with this podcast. Unfortunately, I've been hit by the flu bug last week. Actually started the back end of the week before, as you may have noticed from my voice when I was chatting with Philip Bates. And consequently, James and I were unable to align our schedules, which is probably just as well because I sounded like a gibbering idiot last week. Nothing new there. Still, this time around, because of the lack of schedule alignment between James and myself, I've compiled some Patreon special edition material, stuff that you didn't hear through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, however you get your podcasts. They're here for you to listen to right now. If you're on the Patreon, you've heard this before, but I've compiled it in a new and interesting way, he says. Later this week, I'll be back with a new, brand new podcast, looking forward to what's interesting over the Christmas viewing period. Meanwhile, James and I are working on ideas to celebrate our 500-ish podcast. Long-running listeners will know that we lost count at some stage, as you do. And James has just messaged me that we could possibly promote it with, we are thrilled to confirm a definite date for our 500-ish episode, probably. Join us as we look back with growing uncertainty at the 500 episodes which have led us to more or less this point in time, maybe. So, that's the general vibe that we're going to look at with that at this moment in time. Over Christmas, I will be bringing new material onto the Patreon as well, into the Patreon archive, I should say. Some classic interviews that have never been heard before with people from the world of Doctor Who. Those will be Patreon-only releases, and they will be paid Patreon-only releases. In addition, joining our recent Casterbus magazine Edition Zero, which is available free to access through the Casterbus archive, a couple more free to access through the Casterbus archive things will appear as well. And I've lined up an interesting chat with someone I've spent a lot of time working with over the years that isn't James, and we'll be casting our minds back to some of those things that we worked on together many years ago. So this week's podcast features myself and James McLean chatting over a couple of topics from the past few weeks, things that were in the Patreon that weren't included in the main podcast. And there's also a chat between myself and Philip Bates that was excised from the last podcast that we did for Spotify, but was included in Patreon. So basically, if you're on Patreon, you've heard all of this before, but not in this particular order. I suppose the best thing for me to say at this point is if you want to hear these things as they are produced and go out immediately, then join our Patreon. We have a 7-day trial, and we have a founder tier as well. So the first 20 people that join get the membership of the Patreon for a lot less than everyone else. So if you were hot foot to that there and fill up those 20 spaces, that would be great. And it would look awesome to anyone looking at the podcast, wondering whether to support us or not, because they see that we've got a lot of support. So that would be really useful if you could help us with that. And otherwise, if you prefer just to get it through Apple Podcasts, then please leave us a 5-star review. Let me know and I'll read it out and offer my thanks to you on air. So that's done. So let's move on to myself and James McLean having a chat. Chatting with Philip Bates this week, and he's actually asked me to write something for this new book that's just been announced from Candy Jar Books. Just Sarah, More Than 50 Years of a Doctor Who Companion. He's really doing well out of that title, isn't he? This is a celebration of the much-loved character played, of course, by the late Elizabeth Sladen. The collection covers not only Sarah's time with the 3rd and 4th Doctors, but also her comeback during the 10th Doctor and spin-offs K-9 and Company and the Sarah Jane Smith audio series and, of course, the Sarah Jane Adventures. I know a handful of people have already been asked to contribute to this as well as me. I think it's a really nice idea, this. I think if there's any Doctor Who companion that's going to appeal to classic and modern era, maybe not right up to date modern era, but certainly post 2005 Doctor Who, it is Sarah Jane.
Yeah, Yeah, I see that. I think it's a good call. And there's lots to mine there as well. And she's one of the few people, as you say, to have quite a substantial set of spin-offs. I mean, personally, I know it's a heinous thing to say, but I'm not a massive fan of Sarah Jane Smith.
Steady.
I think is I'm a fan of how Elizabeth Sladen portrayed her. There was a sort of like a very naturalistic way that she performed that character, which when the shows allowed her to, she could do quite good things. But, I was watching some of the early Pertwee ones with her. I watched Invasion of the Dinosaurs the other day with her. And what was the other one? I watched Death of the Daleks, which again, as we said before, I still have a lot of love for that story. It's great. But, she's not that great in those. I mean, she doesn't really become great until she's playing off Baker. And I think their two styles really allow her to show what she can do. But ultimately, yeah, I do feel her as a character companion, a little overrated, played by probably one of the strongest companion actors. Because she's great. And Sarah Jane Adventures, I thought was great. I thought she did great work there. But
There's something about her with John Pertwee where she seems to be kind of, I don't know, uptight's not the right word, but almost kind of constrained maybe in her performance. I don't know. If there's an episode of Some Others Do Have 'Em that she appears in as a, I think it's like she owns a fruit shop or something like that, and she's very relaxed and almost like Sarah Jane in that. That's the Sarah Jane of the Fourth Doctor. But I don't know whether it's, I mean, of course, Tom Baker was a Scouser and Liz Sladen was a Scouser. They're both from Liverpool. So maybe that's had a lot to do with it. But she's almost two
I
different
think.
characters between, not so much Robot, but certainly between Robot and the rest of that series. She's almost a different
I think it's,
character.
yeah, I think it's a little bit of the writing. I get the feeling the dynamic with Pertwee. I think Pertwee was a very, well, we know this, Pertwee was a very powerful person in that space and quite controlling in a different way that Baker would eventually become quite a powerful person in his space and quite controlling. But I think when Sladen was there, I think I get the impression Baker was a lot more giving and interested in that and working on that sort of performance, being able to play off. While I don't think Pertwee was that interested in playing off people, I think he was very much, he saw the role as titular, that he was the leading and everyone kind of worked around him. And that's where I think Sarah Jane ultimately had very little space to go. And to be fair, what was it? Time Warrior, Invasion of the Dinosaurs, Death of the Daleks, Monster of Peladon, and then Planet of the Spiders, and that was kind of it. But yeah, I think Baker at that point, and I think it's interesting. You go to the Five Doctors and you see her with Pertwee, and it's a very different. The way she plays it is very different, and I think because he's no longer, and I think this in, I'm saying this in a nice way. I no longer having to maintain as the flagship of that show. I think he seems a lot softer, and he plays with her in a far more gentle and sympathetic way than he did when he was on the show.
Yeah, no, I think you're right
But
as well.
yeah.
But there's various things about this that back you up. There's the fact that Liz Sladen wasn't the first choice. There was another actress cast, and then John Pertwee decided that he didn't want to work with that particular actress because she was too tall, basically. And then you've got the fact that the whole sort of Pertwee era was built around a sort of a company cast, wasn't it? And John Pertwee was the lead of that, and obviously felt various responsibilities as well, and probably felt that it, he had to get it right, and for him to get it right, then the people around him had to be the right people. So that probably fits
Plus,
into
also
that as well.
by that point, Delgado had passed,
Yeah.
and he was kind of aware the show was shifting
Yes.
his tone away from UNIT, which I don't think he was happy with.
No.
So I think Sladen appears at a point where he is not perhaps at his peak in terms of really enjoying himself. I'm not saying he's phoning it in,
No.
but
Well,
I
again,
think
she was
he's
his
in a place where it's no
preference.
longer, yes.
So he's gone for a preference there in order to, as you say, have that particular stature and be taller and be the lead and be the person that people go to and ask the questions of, and that's a very traditional.
I mean, it'd be fascinating to know if Sladen had appeared at the back end of Baker's era, let's say, the last season of Baker's in the same way the last season of Pertwee, how that dynamic would have played off,
yeah,
given that Baker was in a very different space by then.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically sulking through his last series.
Well, and to be fair, that's, again, it's a hard one because he's sulking for other various reasons as well. It's, yes, obviously a very tempestuous relationship. Well, with relationship,
I think,
as well.
I think he was also sick at the beginning when they started.
Yes, he's sick, recovered. Yes.
Yeah.
No, yeah, no, he was sick all the way through State of Decay, I think, yeah, as far as I recall. Yeah. So, yeah, there's that. Yeah. There's also, he has a lot of power in that space. There's a change of leadership, and he's not, yeah, happy with that. No. So it's hard to just sort of swap things around, but it would be interesting to see where Sladen would have fitted in at the back end. And I suppose that's the same for all of them, is like where it'd be interesting to compare performances and dynamics of Doctors when they start a show and their companion at that point to when, yeah, they end a show, and when you have a companion dropped in. So I've got Perry for Davison, we've obviously got Mel for Baker. You know, that's interesting too.
It is, yes.
Just trying to think of others really, but yeah, Ben, yeah, and Polly, I guess, for Hartnell.
As ever, let us know what you think about what we're talking about in the podcast. We're very interested to hear back from you. And when you do that, it tends to generate more conversation between James and myself. And that's always a good thing. Now I chat with Philip Bates about various things, but it's basically centered around the use of AI upscaling on Doctor Who Blu-ray releases. Now, I got an interesting message from someone last night. In fact, it was Phil, who told me about Doctor Who Season 21 coming to Blu-ray, which seems like it's good timing because the wonderful Sea Devils story's on there. and so this is the final Peter Davison,
yes,
collection, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And they're including Twin Dilemma as well.
Yes.
Working out on that.
Just to top and tail it with quality. Warriors of the Deep. Maybe if they could just, like, if it was a 2DVD release, like the original Warriors of the Deep was a 2DVD release. If the Blu-ray could be a 2DVD release with Warriors of the Deep and the Twin Dilemma on one disc, and then the rest of the series on another disc, and you might never need to watch them again.
I mean, you don't need to watch them anyway. You know, even if you buy it, nobody's forcing you.
Well, I mean,
but I actually...
There's always the option of watching Rula Lenska kick a pantomime sea monster.
Exactly. Yeah. I actually don't mind Warriors of the Deep. I'm not saying, you know, it's not heaven sent.
In any sense of the word.
You can quote me on that.
Warriors of the Deep, not heaven sent.
But it's all right. Apart from the Twin Dilemma, the one that I particularly think is incredibly tedious,
yeah,
of season 21 is Planet of Fire. And I'm sad about that because I love Turlo. I think he's a fantastic companion. And it's his last. And it's, yeah, just, yeah, oh, really difficult to get through. So I'd rather watch Rula Lenska kick a pantomime horse. So sue me. No, don't.
I had the Planet of Fire and the Master's subsequent appearance in the following season were the basis of a recurring nightmare that I had as a child. I have mentioned this on the podcast before, but it was many, many years ago. So as a recap, my grandma used to live sort of like the other side of town to where I live. And it was a nice, quiet little cul-de-sac. And I opened a buffet, and inside was a tiny little master.
Right.
And a dinosaur. So I legged it out of my grandma's house and started running towards my own home. And then I felt a sort of like a thud in my back and I fell down. And then the Rani shouts, "Quick, he's regenerating." And then I got up and ran off, and that was the end of the story. Apart from the bit where I run past a corner shop and there's like a hand coming out of... we used to have these... some shops had chewing gum dispensers mounted on the wall outside them. It's not a thing now, but it was then. Well, it wasn't even then, but it was like an old one that had been painted over. And there was a hand coming out of the chewing gum dispenser. And then I woke up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's... And that was recurring.
Yeah, I had that at least three times, yeah. Probably three times most, yeah. But yeah, yeah, yeah. So...
Crikey.
Yeah, yeah.
Every time the Rani turns up, it's a disaster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the third time she looked more like Bonnie Langford, but... no.
Oh, yeah, I've had those dreams.
I'll behave. So, yeah, so... What date have we got for the release of this? Is this out now or is this coming out next week or something?
No, it's coming out in March.
In March.
But with these collections, the first, I don't know, six or something were always delayed. So might be March, might be 2028. I don't know. I think they've probably got it together by now. But what is interesting, I find, is that they are using AI to upscale.
Yes.
And it still looks like melted wax. It's still awful.
Well, this is the interesting thing about this.
I'm not sure.
Because it's not only the BBC that are doing this. Do you know about the new version of the Beatles anthology? Mm. Have you seen the AI upscaling in that? There is upscaling in that.
No.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is in order to get things so they look good on 2K or 4K. Displays, of course, but the fact remains something that was filmed on like 625 lines or 500 whatever lines in 1963 is never going to look good on 4K without either like letterboxing it in some way or pulling it out and upscaling it. But because the upscaling technology isn't really where it needs to be. So in the Beatles anthology, I've seen photos of like a guitar kind of merging into John Lennon and Paul McCartney growing an extra cheek, for instance, during a live performance. So these things aren't good.
This is like K9 and company. Sarah morphing into K9.
Yeah. I think this is one of these things. A lot of this is happening with AI. It's not just AI, but there is this, I think in modern society there, and we're largely entertainment, but it's not just limited to entertainment, but we do have a tendency as a civilization to try and run before we can walk. The AI stuff isn't ready for this yet. And the fact that we're using it in such a way, and I know that there is an opportunity to redo it later on, but to put it out in that state seems haphazard to me at best.
Yeah. Plus the first, well, I don't know how many releases there have been now, to be honest, but the first few collections didn't use that. They used upscaling technology, but not AI like that. Mm. And they looked fine.
Yeah.
I think they looked more charming. So... Even though I love The Fifth Doctor, I love Caves of Androzani, I really like season one, really. It's season 21, sorry. In a kooky kind of way, I'm not too bothered about pre-ordering it because I'm very opposed to AI. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that they roll it back a bit, but certainly in the trailer they used... They showed footage that was using AI. I just think it's a big shame.
I don't want to disparage anyone, but it feels like when they're putting stuff out that's been enhanced with AI, it feels slightly lazy. Like they're just like handing it off to the machine to do rather than going through it frame by frame, which I know some of the people involved have probably done that many, many times, and maybe they're sick of looking at the same frames over and over again. But at the end of the day, it's a commercial product that you want people to buy. And if people are literally being put off buying it because of haphazard upscaling, which is a phrase I'll use again, then that seems to be self-defeating.
Yeah. Plus, if you've got people who are tired of doing it, then bring in some people who are.
Yeah, there's a solution,
there's
isn't
always,
there?
Yeah, there's always people who need jobs.
Yeah.
So you're doing people out of that.
Yeah.
And it's a big franchise, you know. It's Doctor Who. There's always going to be people who want to be involved in some capacity.
Well, I was having some thoughts about this the other day. Because Doctor Who, in some ways, James and I were talking in the last podcast about how, and maybe the one before, about how the BBC doesn't really, it's very protective about Doctor Who, very precious with Doctor Who, but it doesn't really know what to do with Doctor Who. So it's very happy to, say, slap the Doctor Who logo on a bunch of crap books, or, you know, but they won't put the necessary effort into making a good video game. They want a video game that's very narrowly defined and has very strict rules to it. And a lot of developers have told us this, and writers of the games have told us this in the past, so I'm not saying anything new here. So it's almost, I was thinking about the conversation I had with James, and you've just reminded me that it's almost Schrodinger's big franchise. It's both a big franchise and a tiny franchise at the same time, and no one really knows in which state it is at any moment.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. Yeah, and I think as well, people's ideas about it change so much, and the personnel at the BBC change so much that even when something is successful, it might not be very long lasting.
Yeah.
You're talking about games there. I was thinking of the adventure games with Matt Smith's Doctor, and they were great.
Yeah,
and they were really solid. They had like Phil Ford was writing some of them.
Charles Cecil was overseeing it as well.
Yeah, and they were really quite good for what I believe was a freebie.
Yeah, there were free games.
But I think in that they did two series, but the second series consisted of one game.
Yeah.
And then they lost interest. So it's very frustrating.
Yeah. In terms of video games, the only real successes Doctor Who has had, and I've used the word loosely, but is the Doctor Who adventure games. You've got the mobile game, Doctor Who, I want to say Legacy. I should know. We talked to the developers many years ago about this. This is like the dual matching combat game, team game thing. And not even a Doctor Who game, really. Lego Dimensions. They're the only ones where it really works. And there are so many other ways in which it could be done. You can create games based around Doctor Who, whether featuring the Doctor, whether featuring characters from Doctor Who, whatever, that could do the job. And instead, I mean, Destiny of the Doctors, for example, which came out in 1990, I want to say 97 or 98, had this conceit even, that you weren't playing as a Doctor, you're playing as like some creature the Doctor had made in order to rescue him from the Master's trap. Almost exactly the same concept was used for the Jodie Whittaker games, where you're not playing as a Doctor, you're playing as someone who's doing a favour for the Doctor. And it just, like, you're playing as the Doctor's companion. Well, who wants to play as the Doctor's companion? No one wants to play as the Doctor. Who the hell wants to be the Doctor's companion, really? If you've got a choice of being the Doctor or being the Doctor's companion, which one are you going to choose?
Yeah, exactly. I'd choose Sarah morphing into K9 personally, but that's not for everyone.
Now, of course, James and I have already touched on that topic in the past. So
if you do have any thoughts on that, and obviously you've heard a different view on that from Philip, and you know it's not entirely different to mine, then please get in touch. We'd really like to know what you think, because you're the target audience. So do you want those Blu-rays with the AI upscaling, or do you prefer just to keep hold of the DVDs and reuse those? Let us know what you think about that. And the podcast finishes after this chat between myself and James McLean. You were talking about the 90s, and we were also talking earlier about, you know, like not really having an opportunity to find new stuff because our groups are different, and you know, when you're at school you can bounce off other people and find new things, etc. And you know, the algorithmic control of what we discover on the internet has kind of I think killed some things. And this isn't directly related to Doctor Who in any sense, I don't think, other than the fact that once upon a time there was a lot of old websites that are no longer there. I found through Facebook, because there used to be some very good recommendation things, and you'd find amazing websites, and that doesn't really happen anymore because everyone's just going like that on the phone looking for the next thing to pop up in their feed. Now, I was kind of doing that. I popped onto Facebook to see what the photo of the day was, and a notification came up, and it's a website called Andrew Lloyd Website. And I don't know the actual truth behind this site, but the gist of it was on the Facebook post that it's Andrew Lloyd Webber's website from the 1990s, but I think it's a spoof, whether it's from the 90s or now. And it was originally on GeoCities. It's been reanimated on NeoCities. It's called Andrew Lloyd Website. And
nice pun.
Yeah, it's almost like a spoof. Or I mean, it's got to be a spoof, but it's very amusing, and it's done in that kind of, you know, like that scrolly big text, blue links, GeoCity style. It's so good though. It's one of the best things I've seen on the internet in a long time.
Do you think there could be eventually a revisit to websites, in the sense that you're getting a younger generation, which, well, not all of them, obviously, but, you know, computer science, you know, we didn't really have computers. I mean, it's a weird thing being a generation which has seen the internet through from its conception, its public conception.
Yes.
But something which I don't see in today's market for young people is kind of like the website. And yet the website in itself is a very personalized, powerful space to control and deliver information in a way, in terms, going back to content. You know, YouTube controls how that content looks to a degree outside of your video. You're in a set space, a white or black space, depending whether you've got your device on light or dark. Very set framework. Control over what you actually put on to some degree. Yes, you could monetize it. So for some people, YouTube is about making money. But the website was very much a sort of space where people could individually control, curate, and represent content in a way that they wanted to do, which kind of went out with MySpace, which was the last bastion of that sort of control. And I just wonder whether there could one day be a resurgence in that. Because
I think there could be. Do you know why I think that? Partially because of this, but also because there's a kind of resurgence in teletext. And the fact that something so kind of like, everyone had it, but the fact that it's so difficult to actually bring back, unless you've got old VHS cassettes where the signal's kept. So like, because it's part of the broadcast signal, some of the lines is where the teletext signal was kept. So that is why old VHS tapes have teletext on them. And you can only see them through a decoder. So there's an increasing number of videos on YouTube.
I did not know this.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so there's an increasing number of videos on YouTube of people uploading their teletext stuff off old VHS. So the fact that that is having a resurgence, and there's a lot of people who seem to be quite keen on the aesthetic as well, even though, like, to us then, it looked a bit lo-fi and a bit blocky, and, you know, you had these, like, even compared with, like, a Spectrum or a Commodore 64 or a BBC Micro, which is what they were flipping using. The graphics didn't look great through your TV. The fact that that is having a resurgence, and that was kind of a niche thing,
I think there's a very good chance of like the Geo Cities and the all the other things like that from the time having a resurgence. Yeah,
I could just but I'm thinking more about
the whole general style.
I'm thinking more about the idea because I mean everything that say young people create now is enforced and controlled through usually a social media platform.
Yes.
And I wonder whether there's a point where there might be a breakaway from that into spaces where, like we could back in the early 2000s, control and represent and to some degree enjoy the lo-fi-ness. The lo-fi-ness might be a part of it.
Yeah.
That they might, because I mean, we see that. I mean, we see that in games, you know, that the young people, you know, the Minecraft as a big, obvious example that. Stardew Valley, there's a lot of games which are played across the spectrum where lo-fi is kind of got a coolness to it. So I'm just wondering whether there could be a replication of that, because it is weird that we live in a place, in a world where so much of our content is, and this is a comment which is mind-blowing, is controlled by big tech in a way that controls how it's curated, how it's released. And I think a lot of that content, especially for some of the social medias like Instagram, isn't about monetizing. And even if it was, I'm surprised there's not more of these sort of spaces which are like the old websites, like the GeoCities, which just can still be linked to the monetization on social media platforms. It allows content creators to have a real proper control over their worlds in the way that GeoCities allowed. So I think there's a two thing there. Yeah, I think like for people like you, especially, who enjoy the sort of stepping back to the aesthetics and the engagement of sort of older technology, I wonder whether there's a space for you younger people to start doing the same and be either.
Well,
I don't know.
We don't even need to
have websites like we did,
which is ironic because we're literally carrying servers around in our pockets.
Ooh.
It's insane. You know, you can open a text file and you can create a website in about 3 minutes. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be like the website that you're listening to this through, but it is literally a website that you can create just by typing in a few phrases in a text file and saving it and then hosting it. So I was going to say, over the past few months, you were talking about like retro aesthetics and things, although you didn't say the word retro. There's been several first-person shooters that have come out on Steam that are basically along the same lines of like Wolfenstein 3D or Doom. There's so many of them coming out now, partially because they're pretty easy to engineer with game engines and what have you, but also because people are buying them, people are interested in them. So... And I think it's across the board.
Yeah, I think
it's just websites. I think it's the whole thing.
I don't think it's... I think obviously a lot of it is based on, I'd say millennial more than Gen X, but the sort of people remembering all the lo-fi-ness of 90s sort of console, early console stuff, Mega Drives, SNES, but I think particularly things like the Mega Drive and people who grew up as kids and remember that and seeing that and they sort of are drawn to that. And that's where you see a strong Stardew Valley audience and the like. But I think there is also something quite gentle about it. I mean, there's no doubt that people are going to, you know, people growing up now who grew up and seeing that in Minecraft, you know, and that sort of lo-fi-ness of that, it's an aesthetic which seems to calm people. They seem to enjoy and it's freeing.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think the bottom line is here is will there be a resurgence in the almost like the empowerment of people who love things through websites, the fun and space to play, which is very hard to control.
Yeah.
And if that does start to happen, how does tech sort of react to that? Probably not nicely, because they don't want people there. They want people in their own space. I think it's just always fascinating to just wonder, you know, because we see things go in cycles. We see people often rebuke or want to resist their parents or rebuke and resist the norms. And that's where you get, you know, underground cultures that start to spread, they're sort of like we've got now. But it's like, I suppose it's guessing like, where's the next underground culture going to be digitally? And what will it include? And just to keep this on format and on topic of what we talk about, I doubt it include Doctor Who, but there we go.
Well, you don't know. It might.
It might do. Absolutely. I mean, there is. I'm sure there's. At the moment, I know we're probably going to have to finish in a sec, but there's the, you know, they're doing stuff on social media at the moment, aren't they? The BBC, sort of like they've been landmarking where the police box is at Stonehenge and in Cardiff, and trying to get people to go to a website to sort of look at it. So there's a little bit of that resurgence in sort of trying to pull people away from social media to a sort of website spot. So no, it's perhaps not going to go away for...
I mean, in many ways, Doctor Who was like doing that.
Yeah.
Here we go again, 20 years ago with the with Mickey's website and
Unit and
So maybe Doctor Who does have a place in that.
I think there's a space. There's an interesting space. I think we've become in the internet just so very corporatized that even where things are indie, it tends to be within those corporate spaces or where people are trying to be indie. And it's just, it's interesting to think, like, is there going to be a point where either industry or people just start moving away from there?
Well, it's very difficult. Like, talking as someone who runs a website, I'm talking specifically about Gaming Retro here, because that's my most successful website at the moment. I get it, you know, it's formatted to look like a professional website, because it is. Mm-hmm. And there are adverts run on it, and I'm working on a system of being able to remove adverts if you sign in, etc. The number of emails I get from PR companies and advertisers who are, and also just PR companies with like a big bunch of information that might be interested to the readers, and then you've got those magic words, you know, like a link to a casino site or whatever, which is an absolute no-no for me. And, you know, trying to find a way of keeping something like viable as a hobby or something, might just like pay for a holiday over the course of a year or whatever, without saying, okay, yeah, we'll have like adverts to marijuana extracts or casinos or whatever. I don't want to be associated with any of that. Firstly, because they're nothing to do with gaming or what I consider to be gaming. And secondly, they're just not right for me. And I think there's plenty of places that will just advertise anything, that will then, that will get on board with any advertiser or whatever in order to make some money. And I think that that's a very quick and easy way to make money, but it's not for me. I don't want to be part of any of that. I just want to focus on what I think is interesting and share that with people. And if that means that I don't make £100 for linking to a casino, then that's fine. But there's plenty of sites that will go down that route. And I think that's the
difference. That's kind of what's interesting, is that websites at the moment almost either exist as shops, as adult entertainment, and we can include gambling in that as well. You know, I find it hard to think of any sort of other approaches that kind of websites have anymore. And I just feel like, is there a space? And there's probably a business model there, to sort of a GeoCities kind of business model there, to actually. And I know you've got sort of like the sort of Wiki and all those sort of site website builders, but they're aimed at sort of like small businesses and people who need a representation to sell something. And that's why you might use those, or the WordPresses and the like. But to actually have like a space which is just really about you, which isn't about business, which is about what we talk about, which is about pleasures outside of adultness, it's just, I think, yeah, I just wonder whether there's a pocket there which might eventually might occur. But yeah, I don't know.
It's an interesting question.
Fandom.
And it's probably something that's going to come along. But and if it does, then we'll pick up on this again. Just to wrap this up and just to circle this around completely to Doctor Who, the very first website I ever built, I even went so far as registering a domain name and started coding it by hand before I gave up and started using Microsoft Front Page Express, was called TARDIS-tastic.
Oh, very cute.
Yeah.
That's what you're missing, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Casterbus, a compilation edition, if you like, of material unheard beyond Patreon. I'm Christian Corley. You've been listening to me chat with Philip Bates of the Doctor Who Companion.com and James McLean, my usual podcast companion. We'll be back with more soon. Until then, it's goodbye from us.